Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 31 of Game On with Cody and John. On this episode's big deal, the Looney Bin. Andy Looney from Looney Labs stops by for a Game On interview. And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny, the Adventurers. Is it a lost treasure or will you throw it into the lava pit? All this and Andy Looney coming up on Game On with Cody and John. Well, howdy gamers. It is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, board games, card games, role-playing games, stuff like that. Coming to you from
stuff like that.
Stuff like that there. Coming to you from beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana.
6-0 Colts.
Oh, looking good.
Looking good.
They were looking good last year, though, and we saw what happened.
Yeah, I kind of worry that we're going to win like 13 games and then, you know, we clinch the division and we rest our starters and then we get whooped in the first round of the playoffs.
Yep. Boy, that's kind of how it's gone.
That's how it goes here in Indianapolis. But
it's also, the end of October here. So we're getting close to Halloween. We've got kind of the little bit of a crispness in the air. My kids and my wife and Cody's wife are actually downstairs right now as we're recording, carving up the pumpkins.
Carving the pumpkins. That's right. The frost truly is on the pumpkin.
Yep. But up here, no frost, just hot gaming.
What do you mean by that?
Well, as always, we've got lots of great stuff to talk to you about on this episode of Game On. For our big deal, we have the Looney Bin.
Yeah, our first, I almost said radio interview, our first phone interview from Mr. Andy Looney, the co-founder of Looney Lab Games, and it's going to be a great one. They make a lot of good games, and there's not a game of theirs that I have not liked.
Yep, and I think that's probably true for me too. I don't think I've played anything that I haven't said, let's play that again. So just great time talking with Andy Looney, so we look forward to bringing you that interview. And then in Buy, Try, or Deny,
The Adventurers, the new hotness from Gen Con.
Dun, 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 dun,
we just
dun,
got
dun,
it. Dun. Or as I like to call it, Hollow Earth Expedition, the board game.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Yep. I mean, what other game can you have a big boulder chasing you during the game?
Exactly.
Very exciting.
So we have a very full docket for you today, but of course we stand on tradition and we always start with the Game On Inbox, which starts
right now.
The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Do it. All right, it is the Game On Inbox, and we've got a bevy of material for you here.
A plethora.
A plethora of material. But before we get into that, it is time to do our due diligence to the man.
Wow.
Instead of an audio clip, actually, John's going to tell you about some of the cool myriad promotions that are going on right now.
That's right. As much as we love the boop, 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 noise from the music from the Myriad spot there. We just want to talk to you about some stuff that Myriad Games has going on. Our show is sponsored by Myriad Games on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. And if you have a friendly professional game store where you are, we'd encourage you to go and support it. And if you don't, then check out Myriad Games at myriadgames.com. They have a lot of... one of the things that's cool about their store is that they've got a lot of great giveaways and drawings and stuff going on. And, you know, if you happen to live in the New Hampshire area,
live free or die,
then you can go in and talk with Dan and, you know, check out all the great stuff that Myriad Games has and, you know, sign up for their drawings where they will give away every month Myriad money, which is basically store credit in their store. And if you don't live in New Hampshire, like we don't, you still have an opportunity to enter some of these drawings if you become a fan of Myriad Games on Facebook, which is facebook.com/MyriadGames.
Yep.
Or if you follow Myriad Games on Twitter, which I think it's one word, you know,
exactly.
At Myriad Games.
I know the Twitter's tough for you old folks.
I don't understand. There's tweeting. but if you will sign up and become a fan or follow the Twitter feed, then that's going to get enter you into drawings for myriad money every month. And so that's
doing great against the yen right now.
It's good. You know, it's a good exchange rate.
Exactly.
You know, one thing that I've really enjoyed about, you know, getting to know Dan and Sarah and everything they got going on at Myriad Games is it really does sort of feel like, you know, you've got a friend in the game business. You know, it's like, I don't know if it's true worldwide, but here there's a company called the Shane Company that does diamonds mm-hmm. and jewelry. And at the end of their commercials, they always say, "You've got a friend in the diamond business." That's sort of how I feel with Dan. He knows, I'm sure, from listening to the show and listening to our top 11, that Dominion is my favorite game. And he just sent me off an email a week or so ago and said, "Hey, do you know the new Dominion Seaside expansion is going to be coming out? Do you want me to reserve a copy back for you?" And
that's solid.
That's nice.
We need that around here.
Totally, we do. Yeah, because and just for him to be able to kind of anticipate needs, and you know, I'm someone who I've only really met him in person a few times. I live, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles away, and but it's that kind of personal relationship that a friendly professional game store like Myriad Games can offer you. So I would really encourage you to check out that great store, Myriad Games.
Twitter.com/Myriad Games or Facebook.com/Myriad Games.
Yeah, and next episode we'll be telling you about even more great stuff coming from Myriad Games and some of the special programs they have going on.
Absolutely. And speaking of game stores that aren't quite up to that level, I went into Licorice Game Preserve, and this will segue into games we've played.
Okay,
which
I was
talking about. Kaylin and I were on the lookout for a mixing medium, the Privateer Press, the P3 mixing medium.
Yep.
Because we are now... We are painting all of our figures from Talisman. We're kind of doing it to get some practice at painting and that sort of thing. Because if they turn out pretty bad, it's not that big a deal because it's just Talisman, you know.
Sure.
But we used I'd used the mixing medium once with John, and I went out to search for it, and I was led to Licorice Game Preserve. You know, of course, I wasn't greeted on entry, but when they saw us looking over the paints, one of the guys came over and I know, right?
What?
And then just kind of, I asked, do you have the P3 mixing medium? Because I was looking around, he just kind of looked and was like, nope, but we do have these oil-based paints. I'm
like, okay.
Cool, you know, that's fantastic.
We've got Settlers of Catan. Yeah. You like that?
We have Dungeons and Dragons available. And then he went off and did whatever. So I'm like, all right.
Fantastic.
He's learning. But we got an actual, one of our listeners had recommended us getting a wash, like an actual Citadel Paints wash, instead of just thinning our own paints. And I've been using it, and it works a lot better, except for, and I don't think this is a thing with the wash, this is with just the Talisman miniatures in general. I don't think they're not as detailed as the, I mean, they're pretty detailed, but they're not as detailed as the, like, the metal minis you might get. So we're finding that wash is actually just kind of, they do their job, but even the tiniest bit will just make them look dirty.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's not enough recesses to go into. So that's been kind of frustrating, but it's nice. We've been painting. We almost have the whole set painted, actually, right now. And we're just tearing through it. So other than that, I've been playing my ongoing D&D game. And starting next episode, per listener request, we're going to have the RPG Corner, or some better name.
We'll come up with some clever name for
that's
it.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'll let you know about that. And then... this Friday, which is actually October 30th, day before Halloween.
Will have passed by the time this is released. But you know.
So we hosted it. It was great. I'm doing kind of an informal thing at my place where we're going to play games like Last Night on Earth and Touch of Evil and Cutthroat Caverns and kind of Fury of Dracula.
Zombie Flux,
mm-hmm. sure. And we're going to be playing all these kind of, you know, Halloween-y themed games, come in costume and all that. So that should be fun.
Awesome.
What have you been playing, John?
Well, in addition to the stuff we played, you know, for a review on the show, I've been reading through my Rogue Trader RPG book.
I'm so proud of you.
And I'm loving it.
My big boy.
I love this universe. You know, we talked about all the Warhammer 40K stuff in our last episode, and man, I'm just really digging it. And I think, you know, the character creation system for Rogue Trader looks really neat. The dice system looks cool, and it's just got great fluff, great flavor. So, you know, I don't know when it's going to be. It might be the beginning of next year, but I think I want to try to run a short campaign of this.
Very good.
Give it a shot.
There's a lot of little campaigns that are going to be going off. I know Kaylin's starting her Pathfinder game at the beginning of next year, and I'm continuing mine. So,
gosh, more, all these RPGs.
More RPGs is a great thing.
Oh,
so,
my goodness. Well,
conform.
Well, I mentioned also last episode that I had played this game called Dicecapades, the kid version. And I did have an opportunity with Cody and Kaylin to play the adult, well, the non-kid version.
Well, now.
When we say adult, I just think it's, you know, going a different direction. But no, just the normal version of Dicecapades, and it comes with like 140 dice or something like that. And it plays, I think, a lot like Cranium.
Oh, yeah.
In that, you know, you're on a space and you have three different areas and cards that you turn over. But I think some of the activities you get to do are pretty fun.
Yeah.
Some of it's very random, you know, being that it's dice. It's sometimes just, you know, everybody rolls one and whoever has the lowest number gets a point or something like that. But sometimes it's things like one of the activities was everybody got a full set of polyhedral dice. D20, D12, D8, D6, D4.
And D10.
And D10, missed the D10, sorry.
You're learning, it's
and,
all right.
And within 30 seconds, you had to stack all of those dice up into a column. And whoever did that first and was able to do it successfully got to go ahead a certain number of spaces or something like that. So that's kind of fun. I mean, It's a little dexterity element to it. But so if you get a chance to check that game out, I think it's worth it. It's a party game. It's real light. You know, it's a fun kind of pseudo brainless way to spend some time. I've also been doing a little bit of painting myself. I've now finished my third Warjack.
They look great.
Thank you.
You have to post a picture on the Guild.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I did. No, I posted a picture of the Crusader. Yeah, that was the second one that I finished. And so, yeah, you can go on our Board Game Geek Guild and check out that picture and, you know, criticize me or tell me that it's awesome or whatever.
Whatever, haters. That's good for a first effort.
Yeah. And so I still need to base that third one. And I've just started on the fourth one, my... what's he called? The Revenger. Cletus the Revenger.
Cletus the Revenger.
And so I'm having still a lot of fun with that. I still have yet to play a game of War Machine, but I'm enjoying assembling and painting these miniatures. So I understand that.
You'll have a dang fine army, though.
Yeah, it'll look good. Yeah. I'm starting to really understand the love of this hobby part of the hobby. So lots of fun there. And is that about? That's about it, except... one thing we didn't mention on our last show, which we probably should have because it was, you know, it's been a couple of weeks now, is we actually did have an opportunity to have a full-on game night at my house.
Yeah.
And we invited about, boy, how many people were on the guest list?
Oh,
it was like 50.
There's like 50 people on the guest list.
And we just hoped and prayed that people would cancel.
Yeah.
Because, because we thought we were going to have just this ridiculous pile of people. I do not have that big of a house. And I think we ended up, the final count was, I want to say 23.
It was a good crowd.
Yeah. And so, about 8 or 9 of those were kids. But we set up 3 big tables. We played all kinds of stuff from Martian Flux to Dice Town. We had a game of Dominion. We played some Cash and Guns.
Run for Your Life, Candyman.
Run for Your Life, Candyman.
Say Anything.
Yep.
Wits and Wagers.
So a lot of party games. We had a lot of non-gamers coming in that we wanted to introduce to new games. But one thing that was I thought was kind of fun about this is that we played Run for Your Life, Candyman with a friend of mine from work, and he had brought his wife and kids. And then we also played, I played a game of Dice Town with my friend's son, who's 8 years old, had a real good time with that. And that very next week, I got an email from my friend at work saying, hey, do you know where I can pick up a copy of that Candyman game? Because we have some friends coming into town this week and we're going to bake some gingerbread cookies and we want to play the game.
Nice.
So I was able to hook him up with a place to get that, not the Licorice Game Preserve, but another game store in the area to get that game. And then the very next week, I got another email from him saying, do you know where I can get Dice Town? Because I wasn't able to find it at the game store. So it's amazing the kind of influence I think you can have when you play a good game with someone, especially if they're not used to being exposed to new games. They might go pick them up. So
it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so we had a lot of fun with that. We'll probably do it again in the near future.
All right, we're going to move into some listener feedback. We got quite a few emails. Not all of them had chaos in the subject line.
Most of them did.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a moment. But we got a great email here from Dave Fishpool, and he is from somewhere in England.
Yeah, from the UK there.
Yep. Do they get upset if you just say England and not UK?
Because no,
I know England is one of the countries that makes up the UK.
Yeah, no, I think if you're from England, it's okay to say they're from England.
Okay.
But, you know, UK is just a general way of saying where they're from.
Right. And
we must sound so stupid to the UK listeners right now.
Hey, you know.
Educate us, UK listeners.
That's
on
right.
How to refer to you respectfully.
I'd love to visit there.
I'd love to visit there.
But anyway, the email.
Fuel up that game on jet.
Dave was the one who sent me the tip about the GW washes, and thank you very much. It worked a lot better than just thinned out paint. I could tell if I had a metal miniature that it would really work well, but I could already see the improvement doing the talisman one. But part of his email, he said that these days I really don't play fantasy and that Warhammer fantasy, and I've diversified into some tabletop board games. Good for you. Mm. And it can be difficult at times to get my gaming group to play them, though I have managed to get some of my friends to play Small World, Pandemic, and soon Battlestar Galactica.
Excellent.
Good man.
Good choices.
And I really enjoy the more lighthearted gaming session than you can get with these games. He mentions he'd be interested to hear some of the accents that we talked about, the Accent Your Character series.
Yeah.
That would be interesting, you know, if they had a Midwestern track and we listened to it. Howdy, y'all.
Hello there.
How are you all doing?
No one would buy it.
He says that Don Dim should be careful since they didn't have a Welsh accent.
And I from what I hear, I think there's quite a bit of rivalry between Wales and England.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wales
has
a cool flag. It's got a dragon on it.
Well, I know on the D6 generation, they have a segment that's a guy from Wales. And,
and
they say that every time he does a segment, they get emails from like five English guys saying, I don't know why you give that guy his own segment.
Wow.
So, yeah. And speaking of that... as far as, I guess, rivalry, if you want to call
it. Oh, yeah.
We got an email from Mr. Stephen Field, and here's what he has to say. This is kind of funny. He says, love your show. You have another Aussie listener here.
Oi, oi, oi.
Am
I allowed to say that?
I don't know. Is that an Aussie thing?
I don't know.
I don't know anything about Australia.
Aussie. Oi, oi, oi.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. Nothing. We sound like a bunch of uneducated American idiots.
Yep. And that's correct. He says, good to hear from Rick a couple episodes ago. You might remember a couple episodes. We had Rick from Perth, Australia, who emailed us in, our first Australian listener who wrote in. He says, I'm writing to have a go at getting the Chaos in the Old World game. He entered our contest. He says, but I also felt I had to write in response to Nathan from New Zealand.
It's on.
So like last episode, we had Nathan Clark from New Zealand write us in to mention that there are some New Zealand listeners as well. He says, it's not that I disagree with anything he wrote. It's just that I can't let a Kiwi come equal to us Aussies in anything.
Wow.
Emails to Game On. Australia 2, New Zealand 1. Wow. Ah, that's better.
That's rough. You'd think they'd like each other. They're right next to each other.
You would think, yeah. But I mean, I said, the whole thing with the English and the Welsh, it's obviously. So we have created some kind, or exacerbated some kind of big rivalry in the Southern Hemisphere.
Wow.
So any of you Australian listeners out there, or New Zealand listeners, write us in. We'll keep a tally. We'll keep a tally of Australian listeners and New Zealand listeners, and you know, we'll create some kind of rivalry down there. Hopefully it won't come to armed conflict or anything.
Doesn't New Zealand get a handicap, though? They're a much smaller country.
I don't know. Well, but they have Flight of the Conchords, which for me, that gives them some extra, extra points there.
Well, it stands at 2-1. He did have a question that I think I'm actually somewhat capable of fielding here. He says he has kids age 6, 8, and 9, and he's interested in introducing them to some role-playing and creative storytelling. Rock on. What's a good way to get kids started in RPGs? Are there games designed for kids? Are there any good, parenthetical, that is, will I enjoy them or will I find them to be repetitive and tedious?
Parenthetical?
Yeah. It's in parentheses. It's parenthetical.
Okay.
English on.
You even speak the punctuation. That's nice.
Well, no.
Game on, exclamation point.
Anyway, I would recommend a few things for you, Stephen. First is, if you're going to pick an RPG just kind of off the shelf, I would definitely go Rules Light. And this is something where I'll go to my old standby, Hollow Earth Expedition, because I believe you can take that game and you can boil it down to just its bare system if you don't necessarily want to do like the 30s adventure thing. But I find that would work well with kids. There's actually a whole branch of kind of Hollow Earth game masters that run events at conventions just for kids. It's called like Wilderness Kids. It's pretty much where they're like, you know, a Boy Scout troop or whatever they would call it there. I know they're called like Girl Guides in England and Australia instead of Girl Scouts.
We need to stop trying to have any kind of knowledge at all.
I know. I'm trying. But anyway... they adapt it for kids, and it's the dice system's easy, and the idea of style points, where you actually are kind of giving them points for playing their character well or doing things, you know, good role playing. You know, you're giving them these physical chips, which they can use to do cool stuff with their character later. And I doubted this at first. I'm like, you know, this can't work with like 6-year olds, but it was really cooking, and everything I've seen works well. So I would definitely recommend Hollow Earth Expedition. And then you may even try some games like Fairy Tale or some of the more kind of board game-ish. Well, it's a card game, but you know they have RPG elements. Tales of the Arabian Nights, you could even maybe adapt to it. That may be a little mature for some of them.
Now, I know my first RPG that I ever played was when I was about 8 or 9 years old. And it was just a one-off thing with a guy that I wasn't even really that close of friends with, but I went over on a Saturday, and his dad ran a game of Tune.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that, I think that's a pretty good one for kids.
I don't know
too.
If it's out anymore.
That's true, but I actually bought a copy of Tune about a year ago on eBay for pretty cheap. But it's originally from Steve Jackson Games, and yeah, it's basically you create your own cartoon character, and you can do whatever cartoon characters do. So that's something I think that kids can sort of can relate to and get involved in. So
yeah, definitely just think light, think the things that put their characters in the forefront. And let them play with some dice and other little chips and stuff, because that I think that physical attachment, heck, that even works with my group. You know, it's like they got a physical chip, you know, it's like, oh, I'm going to do something awesome. So play up that angle and don't plan out the story. Just kind of give it a basis and let them go. I think that's the best advice I can give you.
You know, you said fairy tale. I think, do you mean Once Upon a Time?
I do mean Once Upon a Time.
Okay, because I thought it's fairy tale too, and then I'm like, no, that's not the name of the game.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Time, which is a storytelling card game. So yeah, good suggestions there, Cody.
Thank you.
All right, so that's the listener feedback we had, and we love seeing that Australia-New Zealand rivalry.
Oh,
that's hilarious. So
we're going to have a Revolutionary War too, because all the British listeners are going to be like, you blokes don't know. Oh, no, we're not supposed to
do the accents. You can't do it right. We're just digging ourselves into a deeper hole here. So.
I love it over there. I want to go there.
I do too.
Let's go.
Fuel up the jet. All right. Well, so as Cody mentioned, we got a few emails that didn't have chaos in the title, but boy, the great majority of the ones that we got did.
People wanted this game. Huh?
Oh, this is by far and away the most response we have ever gotten on a Game On with Cody and John contest. And so we had
people
tons.
Email today.
We did.
I think they were trying to wait it out. I'm like, well, it didn't work this time.
I know. Yeah. So it makes me wonder, were they just hoping against hope, or do they think we have just a very unpopular podcast?
I think some of them held it back on purpose, because I know we got one or two that says, all right, I've held it back, you know, and here I'm throwing it out there.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, anyway, so
you didn't win.
Unfortunately, no. So we released episode 30 of the show, I think at like 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that.
You released episode 30.
I did. Yeah.
I was sleeping.
And then by the next afternoon, we finally got our winner. And for those of you who hadn't listened or didn't know, we were looking for the 9th email in the Game On inbox with the word chaos in the title, and whoever did that would win a copy of Chaos in the Old World. And so our winner is
Justin Dominion Davis.
All right, Justin Davis, congratulations.
Well done.
I didn't get a little clap
well
there.
Done.
Yep, yep, yep. Good
well
job.
Done.
Good
Excellent.
Job. Yep, well done.
Way to send an email.
So you did a great job, Justin. So you win a copy of Chaos in the Old World, and Justin, if you could email the Game On inbox and give us your mailing address, and we will send that out to you directly.
Yep, and that's gameoninbox@gmail.com in case you haven't heard the many other times we've said it on the show.
Right, yeah.
But you can send all sorts of good stuff. We love hearing from you guys, and especially if you're from Australia or New Zealand, apparently.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Before we move into the big deal, we do have a bit of a technical report from our head geek, John.
Yeah, and this is a minor thing just based upon an email that I got in the Game On inbox regarding our website. So when we first started Game On with Cody and John, we were using a website called gameonpodcast.libsyn.com.
The good old days.
We use a liberated syndication, or Libsyn, to publish our RSS feed for the show. And so we were using that blog page, I guess, as our main website. Ever since then, of several months ago, actually, we switched over to the new sexy gameonpodcast.com. But we got an email from someone who was still using the Libsyn site as the main site. So we just wanted to mention that our main website is www.gameonpodcast.com. And you can still go to the old Libsyn site, but there's nothing real exciting there.
We're not going
to
see it.
Yeah, comments on posts there. We'll see them eventually, but we really would like to direct you guys, if you want to interact with us and check out our content, check out our main website at gameonpodcast.com.
Yeah, I guess this is also a good time. You can find us on Facebook, and we're on Twitter as well.
That's right.
Game On Podcast, all one word. You can check us out.
Yep, become a fan of us on Facebook as well, and you can just search for Game On with Cody and John, and you'll find our fan page there.
Not Game On with Zach and Cody.
No, or any other Game On for that matter.
Well, I think it's time to game on and get on with the big interview we have with Mr. Andy Looney.
Let's do it.
The big deal.
As far as deals go, this one's pretty big. right. Well, we have a special guest today. We have Andy Looney. He is the, do you prefer, founder, president, lord of Looney Labs?
Oh, I'm a co-founder. I'm certainly not the president. My wife is the president.
Oh, okay.
I'm the chief designer.
Chief designer.
I'm also, you could say I'm the chief creative officer.
The chief creative officer. Okay.
Kristen is the business czar, as we like to call her, but she's the CEO and president. And together we founded the company in 1997.
Well, we just want to talk today just about just sort of your background and just how you got into gaming, and then we'll launch into just to talk about all the great products that Looney Labs has. But Cody?
Yeah, so how did you get started in gaming? This kind of always interests me. It's like, what kind of games did you play growing up, and what got you into the hobby?
Well, I was playing games all my life. It was something that my mom encouraged because, you know, when the kids are playing a game, they're quiet, and my older brothers were. I had one older brother was a gamer. He taught me chess at an early age, and I always thought it was cool when he would get together with his brothers and with his friends, and play things like Risk and Diplomacy and big board games, and so all growing up, I was enjoyed just the regular kind of tabletop type of board games. I had my share of time playing D&D and those things, but just regular old like card games. I played a lot of Hearts growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Cosmic Whip Out, a dice game, inspired me early on. I was a big fan of Nuclear War, the card game for that too. And I never really thought of myself as being, looking to become a game designer. That was really kind of an accident. I was just a gamer myself for a long time.
So how exactly did that accident happen, where you went? Because I've read that you, your background and your wife's is that you actually used to work at NASA, right?
Yes, that's correct. I worked at NASA for 8 years. That's where we met. I wrote flight software that flew in space on the Hubble Space Telescope, and
wow,
and it was a pretty cool part of my life. It was neat to be able to say you worked for NASA, but even cooler really is being a game inventor. So. I don't really have any regrets. I'm not looking back. Oh, but you asked how did I become a game designer? Well, the actual, the story I always give is that what I really wanted was to become a writer. And all through college, I was thinking that someday I would write. And I wrote a longish short story called Ice House in 1986 that described a fictional game played with little pyramids called Ice House.
Wow.
And that fictional game inspired an actual game, and the pyramids just inspired an actual game set that you can now play over 200 different games with. And it was a plot device that everybody wanted to play the game. That is really what happened. I mean, it led to us saying, well, how are we going to get these pyramids made? Everybody wants the pyramids. Next thing you know, we're looking into how to start a company and how to get molding made, and ultimately, although the pyramids have done very well for us, and if you haven't seen them, check them out. The Ice House system is extremely cool. Treehouse is the entry-level game for that at this point. But our biggest hit really is Flux. That was the breakthrough. We kind of learned a lot. We cut our teeth about publishing games and all that with Ice House, but it was when I invented Flux at Kristen's request, simply because... Well, we were struggling with trying to figure out how to make these pyramids and how to make them work. And she was like, couldn't you do like a card game? I could get a card game printed pretty easily. So I said, all right, let me see what I can come up with. And thus was born Flux.
So Flux came out of the fact that Kristen was tired of trying to figure out how to make pyramids.
Yeah, we kind of put the whole pyramid thing on the back burner for years. And focused on doing Flux and card games. It was several years later that we, after having like made some money on the card game, that we were able to say, all right, let's push this money back into the company and buy that expensive injection mold that we've been talking about all these years and really get the pyramids made.
So now this period of time from when you went to, from working in software to now being, are you a full-time game designer now, full-time with the Looney Labs?
Oh yeah, I've been full time with Looney Labs since 1998.
Okay, so that was so 1998. So it was a pretty quick transition then from going from one career to the next.
It worked out pretty well. I mean, for me, we call this time the leap off the cliff.
Okay.
And this was when I quit my day job and said, let's see if we can make a go of this and really, you know, put a lot of energy and effort into it, push hard on it, and see if we can make this thing work. And it actually, I went without any money at all. I made no money for 3 years.
Wow.
Before, you know, we finally had enough money. And you know, we're living off of savings. And Kristen kept her job for maybe a year longer than I did before she, too, made the leap off the cliff, as we called it. And we just had confidence that we would be able to make enough money to survive before all the savings ran out. And it was tough. I'm not going to lie. We've spent a lot of the last 12 years. There have been some very difficult years. It's not easy starting a company, and we've had to make a lot of sacrifices, and we had to borrow a lot of money and all that. But it's proven itself worthwhile in the long run, and we're now doing all right.
I'd say. Would you say you have a particular mission statement or a general theme behind the company Looney Labs and the games you produce?
Sure. Our mission is to create fun. That's it. That's our mission statement. Our mission is to create fun.
Makes the board meetings pretty quick.
That's right. Guys, create fun. Get
actually,
back out there.
You'd be surprised how long it can take to come up with a mission statement as simple as that. You know, there's an adage about writing that's something like, I'm sorry for the length of this. I didn't have time to make it shorter. And that says it's hard. The shorter something is, the harder it is to write.
Yeah.
Wow.
So with owning a game company, what is the most fun thing? I mean, you're self-employed in that regard, but what is the most fun thing to you about owning a game company?
The most fun thing for me is hearing that people have had fun playing with my products, and it's a joy I am treated to many times a day when I get an email or call or just somebody says, places in order, saying, have fun playing this game. It's, you know, those are the moments that really make it all worthwhile. And that's what I'm saying. Our mission is to create fun. We created that fun that those people had while they were playing our game. And anywhere, all over the world, there could be people right now sitting around a table playing Flux or one of our other games and having a kind of human bonding experience and a fun interaction that and, you know, okay, sure, if they hadn't been playing Flux, they might have been playing some other game, you know. I can't take too much credit for the fun a group had, but at the same time, they were laughing and having a fun time playing my game, and knowing that happens and hearing the thanks that I get from that from people, that's the greatest reward.
Well, I think that is, it's definitely a far-reaching thing, because I know that just here in Indianapolis, you know, Flux was one of the first, I guess, gamer-style card games that I was ever introduced mm-hmm. to. It wasn't a traditional card game, and I've played that with so many people, and I've had other people, when I started to talk about gaming, mention, hey, have you played Flux? You know, nope. And that one especially, but also some of the other ones that Looney Labs produces. So I mean, I think your influence is pretty far reaching.
You can tell exciting. People to sit down and hear, draw one, play one, go, you know?
Yep.
Well, Flux has a real magic to it. It's hard to figure out exactly why or what it has that really makes it so cool, so popular with people. You know, I could tell when I first sort of hatched that idea, like, ooh, you know, this one's good. I could tell from the way people were reacting that this one's really going to go someplace. And every time I work on a new game, I can kind of gauge reactions to it and kind of compare them to other successes. And it's always like, God, if only I could do another game that had the appeal of Flux, because that one really has a magic.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I guess it's like so many... a lot of great authors, you know, they have one great novel, you know, and even if they're able to make just that one great novel, then that's such a great contribution, you know. And thankfully, I think you've been able to create, you know, tons of great games.
Absolutely.
You know,
now, I'm very proud of my line. I think I've got some excellent works in there. I mean, the ISOT system, I think, is really an incredible achievement, and it's not even just my games. You know, there's so many different games.
That's one I'm kind of coming back to, because I played it when it was just Treehouse, you know, just the game that comes in the little bin,
mm-hmm.
and I played it and I liked it. And then now I found all of these fan created and just the books of games you can play with. It makes me want to go back and try out all of these different things.
It's not every day you can create a system.
Yeah.
No, the game system, I mean, I had a kind of revelatory moment a couple of years ago when I heard about a textbook about game design called Games People Play, published by the MIT Press. And I was looking in, and I'd heard that I was in this book.
Wow.
And so I got a copy of it and was looking at it, and I was stunned as I read these kind of a couple of pages in this big, thick, dry college textbook talking about game theory and game designs and all this stuff, and it's talking about me and my games. And what really the eye-opening moment was that it described me in a way that I'd never understood myself to be described or what I really was. And I wasn't just a game designer, I was a game systems designer. I didn't even know that you could do that, but that's, it was like, this is what I am. So, wow, okay, I've learned what I am from this textbook that never even heard of a game systems designer. But that's indeed true. I mean, most, obviously, the Ice House system is a game system. Flux is a game system with all the various different versions we put out. That's pretty clear. And even things like, you know, the Chrononauts timeline mechanism is a game system. And Aquarius, too, you know, there's... Other people have invented games that you can play with my Aquarius game, tiles, cards. And so anyway, yeah, I'm a game systems designer. Who knew?
That's awesome. Now, one of the things that I noticed when and I'm a relatively new gamer. I've probably only been a gamer for about 5 or 6 years. I mean, really having this be my main hobby. And being living in Indianapolis, one of the first events I ever attended was Gen Con. And Looney Labs was one of the first companies that I ever... you know, spotted and you know, that had a definite presence at the convention. And it was mainly, you know, games of werewolf being played, you know, late into the night and all the guys walking around with lab coats on and that sort of thing. So it seems like you guys have always had a very strong convention presence, and especially also at Origins. And Cody and I were talking just this year at Origins when we were there about perhaps next year trying out the Big Experiment. Could you speak a little bit about Origins and the Big Experiment?
Yeah, absolutely. I love Origins. Origins is my favorite event of the year. It's the one where we really kind of put all of our best efforts out. It's the Big Experiment is our kind of convention within a convention. It's our track of programming at Origins. We get Origins gives us our own room. It's this really, really, actually this year, well, I don't know. I shouldn't tell you about that yet, but,
really?
I don't know. I think this year's Origins is going to be the best yet. Let's put it that way. And so they give us a really nice room, and we run official tournaments for all of our various different games. And we give out these like, of Olympic sort of medallion, you know, these prize medallions that when you win a tournament, you get to wear this prize medallion around for the rest of the weekend and show off. It's just a great time. Because it's a gathering kind of, it's like I say, it's a convention within a convention, because all the Looney Labs fans know that that's the one to go to if you want to meet with other Looney Labs fans and play in the official Flux tournament or some of the other big official annual tournaments, and we just have a great time. You mentioned Gen Con. We've sometimes gone to Gen Con. Other years we've skipped it. It depends on things like financing and timing and all that. But even if we don't go, there's usually a lot of our fans running around, like you say, wearing the lab coats and playing the games. And the conventions, as I say too, it's like gaming is all about the social. So the convention is the place to meet with other people who want to play the game. So there's conventions are great. I love conventions.
And there's one thing to mention to our listeners. If they were to approach you at a convention, there's something that you could give them maybe that would help them in Flux or be in addition to the game?
You're referring to the basically, I have a card, a special promo card with me on it, that when someone asks me for my autograph, I'll give them a special Andy Looney Keeper that I signed. And so, and you can only get that by meeting me in person. So,
wow.
Indeed, if you meet me in person, The magic word is autograph.
Autograph.
Say that
password
I will, is. I will give you a card with my autograph on it that you can put in your flex deck.
And that's cool. I've got one.
Is that like a wild keeper or something that can be count for all keepers, or is there special?
No. It counts as something specific. In regular flux, it counts as the brain because I'm the brain behind the game flux.
Well, of course, that makes sense.
Actually, I think one of these. I mean, we printed up a big pile of these cards, and I haven't run out of them yet. But when we do, I think the new one will need to have some more fine print about how it works, because we've published all these other games since then. In, for example, Zombie Flux has not the brain but brains, but it also has friends. And so in Zombie Flux, if you put in Andy Looney, he counts as a friend, which means, of course, you can be susceptible to the dead friends rule and things like that. I think in Martian Flux, I would probably... See, I don't even know that I belong in there. I don't belong in Monty Python Flux. Don't fit in there.
You wouldn't be a pathetic human in Martian Flux, right?
Well, but the problem is that my promo card is a keeper, not a creeper.
Right.
Well, and speaking of Martian Flux, that's one of the new games that's just been released, a new version of Flux. That just came out in the last couple of months, right?
Yep, just came out. Brand new. I know, September was our release date, I think. So
okay.
It's the hotness. The new hotness.
And, you know, Cody and I actually had an opportunity to get a demo copy from you guys of this game. And we have a review of Martian Flux that we wanted to share with you guys right now.
Oh, okay, great.
We have just discovered an important note from space. The Martians plan to throw a dance for all the human race. Papa mimi papa mimi papa 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 mimi papa mimi papa mimi papa 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 mimi papa mimi papa mimi papa 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 mimi papa mimi papa mimi papa 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 mimi.
All right, so it's review time, and we're going to be talking about Martian Flux. It's like a little mini micro review.
That's right. It's going to be
Martian
a quick
Flux.
One.
So, Cody, why don't you give right. us the rules rundown on Flux in general, for those who haven't played Flux, and then tell us what's different about Martian Flux.
All right, if you're one of the seven people who haven't played Flux...
Wow.
No, I'm just joking. If you haven't played it, you need to play it. Flux is, at its heart, just a casual card game, which the idea is that it starts out with very simple rules, draw one, play one, and then eventually gets kind of crazy with all sorts of new rules and actions. And the idea being that the goal of the game, which is ever-changing, there are actually cards where you can change the winning condition of the game, are to get things called keepers, which are in the base game. They can be things like time and chocolate and money,
love,
you know,
peace.
Just very kind of abstract things.
TV.
And in some of the later editions, one of which we'll be talking about, you know, Zombie Flux, you might have like a shotgun be one. I'm not sure if that's one off the top right. of my head. Monty Python Flux, where the Grail might be a keeper. But what we're talking about is the new one, Martian Flux, which takes the game of Flux and then puts kind of like the 50s kind of space invader spin on it. And this one, it's if you've played any of the other games, it plays pretty much identical to it. There are a few features that they've added from previous editions, such as creepers, which are kind of like the anti-keepers and that most of the time stop you from your goal, but sometimes can be used advantageously.
Those are cards that you don't want, right?
No, you do not want creepers.
Okay.
And they've added some kind of synergies with certain cards, you know, where if you have card X, Y, and Z, you know, this might happen for you. And now some of the keepers have powers that maybe let you move creepers or let you do other things. So they're kind of taking that base concept of Flux and adding little things. It's nothing earth-shattering if you've played the other ones. But at its core, it's just a light card game that follows in the Flux tradition, but just with a Martian theme to it, which is it's actually pretty neat.
Right. So one of the goals I think that I read in Martian Flux was men without hats,
mm-hmm.
Because you had to have a certain number of people, but none of them could have hats on.
Pathetic humans, actually. They're creepers.
Oh, right. Sorry, pathetic humans.
Because you're trying to take over the Earth.
Mm-hmm. And I think there was some sort of a beauty queen or something,
yeah.
Who has a tiara. And like on the card, it says, you know, my tiara counts as a hat.
Yeah. I think she's actually saying it.
So. Oh, she actually says it in the word bubble. So,
but
very clever and thematic.
Yeah, pretty much any of the Flux games. And it really doesn't matter which theme you try. Honestly, just pick the one that would be most fun for you. And I think you can go with it. Flux is definitely one of those games where you can just sit down, have someone, you just learn as you play and you go. You have a lot of fun with this. So.
It's not a strategic game, really. Although there are decisions you have to make with the action cards and things like that. But, you know, at any moment, a goal card could come out that could cause the game to end.
Sure.
You
know? Yeah, this is a game where it's just a light, fun one to play. And honestly, if you've never tried Flux, stop listening. Go get it. And then come back, because this is one of those games that will definitely have a place in your library, and it's just a heck of a lot of fun, and Martian Flux is certainly no different.
All right, so for I guess it's going to be an easy one, but Martian Flux, buy, try, or deny.
Oh, absolutely a buy. I'll pretty much buy any of the Fluxes, even though they're usually the same game with some different thematic differences, but this one just keeps it going. There's a few new elements here and there with it, but it's a lot of fun, and you can tell they put a lot of thought into it, so definitely a buy for me. Now, John, for you, Martian Flux, buy, try, or deny.
That's also a buy for me, and I'll just echo what Cody says. I really think all the games in the Flux series are really a lot of fun, and you know they're at a real low price point where you're not spending $50 for the game, and it's something you can bring out just about anywhere. I think that Cody even had a picture on his Facebook of he and Kalen playing Flux in the airport, right?
Yeah, I might see if I can get that on the guild. We played Martian Flux the day after our wedding, when we were waiting in the O'Hare Airport up in Chicago to fly, it was the one game we packed with us. We actually played it on the flight as well. Mm. We put our tray tables down.
Very nice.
And it's just one of those games where you can take it out and people know Flux, or you can teach them real quick. So it's a great game, and pick it up.
Awesome. So that's two buys. Let's go ahead and get back to our interview with Andy Looney. Okay, so there was our review of Martian Flux. So and two buys for that. One. So that was definitely a great version of Flux, and kind of a different theming that made it a lot of fun. Now another game that's recently come out is a reprint of Aquarius, and which is a really cool card game. Now one thing about all of these games that we've mentioned, these reprints, is that they're in kind of a different box now, aren't they?
Oh yeah, our new 2-part box. We're really excited about that. It's a nicer box than the usual just tuck box we've been using before. And the best part is the way we've got a consistency now, a uniform style, so that each of our games looks the same. You know, not looks the same because they all have different art, but they look like they go together, you know.
Right. So you can now have all of your Looney Labs games on one shelf, right? You know, and just have them all right next to one another.
Absolutely. They look wonderful when they're all lined up together on a shelf. We've got 9 of our games now out in this new packaging, and we're just so pleased with it. We're gradually reworking the entire line. Everything that we've done that we're going to keep in print will be redone in this new packaging, and it just sure is sweet.
Fantastic. And also, I believe I've read that all of your card games are produced here in the United States, right?
Absolutely, yes. Awesome. We work with a card printer in Michigan, and it is a really, I mean, a lot of companies do their printing in China, and we try to produce our stuff domestically. Our pyramids are made here in America as well.
Kristen's in the basement cranking them out, right?
No, actually, they're located north of Baltimore, but the injection mold that we bought in 1999 is still making ICES pieces. Every ICES piece so far has been made by that one mold. In fact, if you go to my website, just look for me on YouTube. I just posted a little video of Kristen. She took a factory tour when they were printing Martian Flux. So we actually have footage of our game. So you can really see, there it is, being printed here in the States, as it were. Another thing that's really great about that is that our new version of Chrononauts, which was supposed to be out a couple of days ago, has unfortunately been delayed. The time machine is stuck in a time loop, as we like to say. Unfortunately,
clever reasoning.
There was a rather serious printing error. Basically, 5 cards on the timeline have the wrong years on the back, so it's just the game doesn't. You can't play it. It's a crippling error. And what's the good side of it, though, is that if we had this game printed in China, we'd be hosed. The
totally.
Games would have arrived, and there would be like nothing to do. It's like send them back on the boat across. You know, it's like we would not have made our Christmas shopping deadlines if we'd been printing that game in China. But instead, because it's printed here in America, we're able to quickly work with our printer and get things back back on the press, and we will have it out in time. Our new release date for the Chrononauts new version is December 4th. And that includes a new expansion pack for Chrononauts fans who think, oh, it's just the same old game. No. We've got a new expansion pack with new cards. So be sure, if you're a Chrononauts fan, check that out, The Gore Years.
I've looked into it. It looks really funny, just the cards I've seen.
Have you played Chrononauts yet?
Yes, actually. That was one of the games I was introduced to by my in-laws, and they just loved it and raved about it. And we played it. We actually play Uber Chrononauts. We play with Early American and then regular Chrononauts.
That's the way.
my favorite part is you can pick up dinosaurs in it, and they have like one card's a brontosaurus, but they went so far as to name the brontosaurus. Her name is Emily.
Oh, a specific brontosaurus.
Well, yeah, it's like if you're a time traveler and you go and you get a live dinosaur, it's going to be kind of like a pet. You'll end up naming it,
until it eats
all
you.
All the dinosaurs have names. In fact, one of the things about the new Chrononauts edition is that it's got a new dinosaur in it.
Uh-oh.
A Triceratops whose name is Sarah.
Sarah the Triceratops.
Of course.
Yep. But just some of the different twists on time, like I want to say one of them is the Hindenburg or the Titanic arrived safely, or the Hindenburg arrived safely. I forget which one it is.
Oh yeah, well they both do. I guess the flip side of the Hindenburg is bomb found on the Hindenburg.
Okay, yeah.
It's probably not true, but then again, when you invoke time travelers, anything can happen.
That's right.
But the Titanic can also, you can save the Titanic as well. Titanic avoids iceberg, one of my favorite headlines.
Awesome.
Actually, one of my favorite lines on there is the commentary from the lookout. We almost hit that.
Awesome. So we'll be looking forward to Chrononauts coming out in December.
Definitely.
Now going back to Aquarius, another great card game. We actually had an opportunity to play that with some folks at my job, and so we're going to talk about Aquarius and give you a brief review in a new episode of The Lunch Table.
The Lunch Table. When you're on the job, what better way to spend your lunch hour than playing games with good friends? Let's see what's on the lunch menu this week.
All right, so here we are back at the lunch table. It's been a long time since we've been able to play a game at lunchtime.
It has been.
And, brought back the two guest hosts I know you guys have been missing.
The two best guest hosts you've ever had.
The best guest hosts that have ever been on Game On. So we've got Single L.
Bow, chicka, bow, chicka, bow, wow.
And Dave.
And Dave, who... on your theme.
I still
song,
have to work on my music, yeah, okay. Apparently.
So the three of us are up here in the lunch room here.
That's a beautiful room.
Beautiful, beautiful lunch room.
It's a different lunch room than we've
than typically.
Done
true.
In the past.
That's true. We've had to relocate.
I'm sure your listeners enjoy that.
I know you really care about the cafeteria construction that's going on at my place of business, but anyway, so we're in a different room, and we got a chance to play Aquarius, designed by Andrew Looney and from Looney Lab Games, Looney Labs. And just want to talk to you a little bit about how the game works. It's a real simple card game, and it's these cards that have different symbols on them. There's five different, I guess, elements on the cards.
Yeah,
there's fire, water, that includes a fishy in the water. You have air, which is, I guess, a cloud with a rainbow.
Plains, forest, and mountains.
It's not Aquarius the Gathering. You also have stars and, what's the other one? Meadow, like a green meadow.
With flowers.
Yep. So at the beginning of the game, everybody's going to get one of these five goal cards that has one of these symbols on them. And so your goal in the game is to make a connected chain of seven cards of that particular symbol. And so the game is going to start off, everybody gets three cards. The cards themselves are going to have different combinations of these symbols. It may be just one symbol that fills up the whole card, or it may be subdivided into two or four sections. And those two sections might be,
diagonally
or orthogonally, so it's divided up in a lot of different ways. And as you lay these cards down next to one another, they're going to make connections, and they might connect with more than one symbol. So one card will be placed in the middle of the table, and the interesting little quirk in this game is that whoever has the longest hair...
Which was me, my long, flowing locks.
Which is sad, because Lloyd has pretty short hair,
I'm pretty
too,
much like Fabio. That's pretty true.
In what way are you like Fabio?
In every way, sir. Go on.
Okay. And so then the player with the longest hair is going to draw one card and then play one card. Sounds a whole lot like Flux, another great game by Looney Labs, where you're just going to draw one and play one. And you have to match up at least two symbols. If you match up more than two symbols with your cards, then you're going to get an additional...
You only have to match up one symbol. If you match up two...
Oh, did I mess that up? Yeah.
I believe so.
All right, well, you had to make two cards match up with one symbol.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Good point, yeah. So, but, you're going to match up two cards with one symbol. If you're able to match up two symbols, then you're going to get to draw an additional card. If you match up three symbols, then you can draw two cards. And if you pull off the magical four-symbol matchup, which is possible if you use the cards that are divided into four sections, then you're going to be able to draw three cards. And having more cards in the game is good because it gives you a lot more
options.
Definitely
gives you options.
Yeah. And there's also a wild card.
There's one wild card, which is any and all types at all times. It's all character types, and I gotta bring it back around to
it's
magic.
It's a changeling, as we like to call it.
I gotta bring it back around to magic to keep Lloyd interested.
Yeah.
So you just keep going around doing this. There's also some special cards, action cards in the game that'll allow you to trade hands, shuffle cards,
rotate goals,
things like that. So it's got a real random feel to it, very similar to Flux. And I'm saying all this about Flux. These guys actually haven't had a chance to play Flux
yet.
That's gonna be one of the next.
I did see it on TV once.
You did? Good job.
Eon Flux, wasn't it? Anyway.
So the first person who connects seven of these symbols together in an unbroken chain is going to turn over their goal card and say, ha ha, I'm the winner. Guys, what did you think of this game?
I enjoyed it. It was fun.
It was a fun game. I can definitely see how, and I know it has rules for playing with your preschoolers, and that's great, too.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Because that was the first thought I had. If I were to have a child, which I currently do not, but if I were to have one, I would love to play this game with them.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's another thing I wanted to mention is that they do have these rules for preschoolers, and it's sort of a graded rule system that starts off with if you're 3 to 4 years old, 5 to 6 years old, you can remove elements from the game, like maybe don't play with the action cards or don't even play with the goal cards. You can just sort of start off by making patterns and making it sort of a puzzle-like thing. It's a real quick little card game. It probably only takes 10-15 minutes to play.
Yeah, we played two in just over 20, and our second one was the longer one.
And an easy game to play with somebody that's not, the true hardcore gamer or whatever, just, your wife or somebody, or if you're a female that happens to be the gamer and the husband is not. However, you want to do that. I don't want to be sexist on the game on with
it's Cody and John. It's important to maintain that kind of
political
correctness. We know how that's...
Oh, diplomacy, speaking of which. Yeah. We're going to be playing that later on.
That's true, yeah. We'll talk about it later on.
I just wanted to talk about that right now. But anyway, it's a great game. Right. Diplomacy and this game. Back to you, John.
All right, so... Oh, I'm taking crazy pills today. Buy, try, or deny for Aquarius.
Oh, buy.
Buy for you? Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely a buy. Especially if you got kids.
Yeah, I would say if you have children especially, it's a real good one. I'll give it a buy as well. So there's Aquarius and from the lunch table here.
You know what? It's almost quick enough that... Because I think about that card game you have that determines start player.
Yeah.
It's almost quick enough that you get... Hey, let's play this. Whoever wins starts the game.
It could actually be...
Yeah, like a little start player game.
A pre-game starter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it kind of gets you going, playing the game, and then whoever wins this starts the next game.
Yeah, really good little filler that you can throw in any time during a game night. So three buys from the lunch table here, and we'll send it back to the studio. Thanks, guys.
No problem.
This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Age of Aquarius. Aquarius. Aquarius.
All right, that was the lunch table on Aquarius. Those are a lot of the current releases. Are there any upcoming releases? There's a mention of a secret project on your... web, would you say it's a blog or a website or both?
Oh, when I first started it, the word blog didn't exist. I think it's probably a blog. I think it's fair to call it a blog. I also like to call it a webzine.
Ooh.
Okay.
But John, you have the nomenclature for that project.
Yes, somewhere on your site there, you had mentioned something referred to as SPRPP.
Right. That's Secret Project RPP.
Oh.
Basically, whenever I'm working on a new game, I give it some sort of a code name, which is generally secret project, some sort of cryptic code, you know. So that gives me a handle on how I can refer to it while I'm not ready to tell anybody anything about it, but except that I'm working on something and they could expect it to come out soon. And so Secret Project RPP is very close to being ready to be unveiled, but I can't say anything more about Secret Project RPP at this time.
Okay, all right. Well, we won't press you against the wall there. But now, one kind of separate, sort of separate from Looney Labs is you've launched kind of a new venture called Fully Baked Ideas, and you have a product out under that name. Can you sort of explain what Fully Baked Ideas is about and about the first game that's come out?
Yeah, sure. Fully Baked Ideas is a sort of a side company, an imprint. Basically, Looney Labs is a family-friendly kind of card game company. Our games are they're designed for adults because they're ultimately designed to be things that I myself enjoy. But at the same time, they're good for the whole family, and most of our games are sort of wholesome and great for everybody. But at the same time, there are, you know, mature themed topics that we would like to be able to publish games about, and venues that are more for adults that we'd like to be able to get our product into. And yet we want to be able to keep them separate from the rest of our line. So we started this new thing called Fully Baked Ideas that will allow us to publish adult content, if you will.
Okay.
Our first entry into that, and I suppose, you know, a lot of times we say, all right, now if you're over 18, you can click on the site and find out what I'm about to talk about. But, you know, it's already assumed that it's okay. But anyway,
sure.
The new version is Stoner Flux.
Dude.
The marijuana-themed version of Flux.
But, okay.
We actually published this some years ago. It was kind of, in our younger days as a company, we experimented with this marijuana-themed version of Flux, and it was a big hit. So to speak, and everybody really liked it. So we wanted to republish it, but at the same time, we want to figure out how to separate it from the rest of the line so that we can have it out there for the people who want it, but not put it in the face of the people who don't want to see it. So that's what Fully Baked Ideas is all about.
Sure.
Moreover, it's not like it's the only thing. I mean, there's plenty of other topics that we might want to be able to do games about that aren't good for the kiddies. Stoner Flux comes out November 13th, and sometime next year, Drinking Flux will also join the product line of Fully Baked Ideas.
Wow. Well, I think it's cool that you're able to make that that break between, you know, the adult themes and the family friendly themes, rather than trying to shoehorn those games into your normal brand. I think that's probably a smart business idea, I would assume, not being a businessman, but.
No, it's something we spent literally about 4 years pondering how best to do it, because we wanted to be able to put it out there, but in the right way. And so we just let Stoner Flux sit out of print, even though we knew we'd be able to sell a lot of copies of it. We just kept it on the back burner until we were able to really bring it back the way we wanted to bring it back. And finally, that's happening.
Cool. Okay, well, so if that's a topic or a theme that interests you, the listeners, then be sure to check out Stoner Flux coming out on November the 13th.
Absolutely. And we'd love to let Andy get out of here, but first, he must endure our last five questions, that is, the final five. And God help you, Andy. If you've watched Inside the Actor's Studio, maybe it's kind of like that, but without the what's your favorite curse word question.
Yep. And so being that you're our first...
I begged John for that. I was like, can we do it?
We could, I guess. But being that this is our first interview with the game designer, this is sort of an inaugural final five. And so we're going to take your answers, and, you know, they will be preserved for posterity on our podcast. And then any other designers that we have come on, we're going to ask them the same five questions, and we'll hopefully get a little bit of insight. So are you ready for the final five?
I guess you didn't warn me about this one. So you know, you put me on the spot. I don't know what kind of questions we'll have, but I'm ready. Let's try it.
Awesome.
All right. I think they're pretty tame, but here's the first one. What is your favorite game that you were involved in creating?
I would have to say Flux. I mean, I love my pyramids and I love all my various games, but Flux. You know, Flux has done so much good stuff for us. It's, and I still love it. You know, I'm still finding new ways to create Flux rules and things like that. But I'm still happy to sit down and play a regular old game of Flux any old time. I'll never get sick of it. And it's put us on the map game-wise. Flux is our biggest hit in every way. It's my favorite game.
Awesome. All right, question number two.
What is your favorite game that you were not involved in creating?
I think I have to go to an oldie but goodie and say Hearts.
Hmm.
I'm also a big old fan of Texas Hold'em Poker, which I play with our Ice House Pyramids, so it's really Martian Hold'em. If I can mention, if this is a little bit of a tricky one, since I invented the game Pyramids, so I was involved with it, but my favorite Ice House game that I did not invent is called Binary Homeworlds, and I'll drop whatever I'm doing to play a game of that with somebody. It's by my good friend John Cooper, and in a lot of ways, that's my favorite game by anybody, not me.
Awesome. Okay, well, question number three.
Question number three. What is the single best thing about playing games?
Victory! No, I don't. I don't know. That's kind of
correct.
A flippant answer. I think the real answer is getting to have quality time with your friends.
All right. Question number four.
If you could only play one game for the rest of your life, to the exclusion of all others, which one would it be?
Oh my God!
And this doesn't have to be one of your games, but it could be.
That's a really hard question. I mean, there's so many great games, and I mean, I've listed off a few favorites for you already, so I would probably have to pick one of those.
Okay.
I don't like this question. I don't want to be forced to choose just one game for all eternity. It's like some sort of purgatory thing. You will not play this game, no matter what game I pick. After a while, I'm going to be really tired of that game and want some new game.
All right, Andy Looney rejects our reality and substitutes his own. Okay, very good.
Oh, I do like the Mythbusters. No, I'll say Binary Homeworlds.
Homeworlds. Okay, great. And finally, question number five.
All right, this is the tough one, all right? Monopoly.
Oh, this is the tough one. Okay.
This is the tough one.
This is probably the toughest one.
Monopoly. Great board game or greatest board game?
I'll say great board game.
Okay. Well, Andy, we really do appreciate you coming on the show and talking with us. And I think it was a really successful first interview for us.
I hope so.
I hope you had a good time.
I had a great time. Talking to you guys. And as I always like to say, thanks for playing my game.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
And well, so, thanks for making your game.
Yes, making your game so we can play them. All right, well, thanks so much, Andy.
You're very welcome.
Buy, try, or deny.
Game reviews for the common gamer.
It's that simple. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I like that Andy Looney guy.
He might have a future in games, you know?
I think he might come up with a couple of good ideas.
Well, we've got a great buyer, trier, deny for you today. We're going to cover AEG's new game, The Adventurers, which is a game that plays on a lot of the pulp themes of things like Indiana Jones and The Mummy and a lot of that sort of thing. And this takes it all and puts it in a neat little board game form for you.
Dripping with theme.
This is a... I guess you could almost just call it Ameritrash just based on the components and the style.
Oh, yeah,
alone.
Definitely. Yeah, and all the dice, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And the amounts of dice and bits. So John is going to give you his patented rules rundown for The Adventurers.
All right, so The Adventurers was designed by Frederick Henry and Guillaume Blossier.
Oh, well.
I'm
guessing, sure it's not a Euro game?
I'm sure, even though it seemed to have been designed by a couple of Europeans.
Which are fine. We're not going to start a war with Europe.
I'll tell you what, Game On apparently hates Europe and Australia.
I loved them.
Okay.
The Adventurers.
By AEG, the Alderac Content Entertainment Group. You can find this game at Myriad Games and at all of the other friendly professional gaming stores out there, as well as many online retailers. So it's widespread. Just came out less than a month ago. Yeah. So brand new. So this game is, you're taking on the role of a couple of adventurers, you know, and very much in the pulp style. And the board is set up in the fashion of a... kind of like an ancient temple or mm-hmm. some sort, and the goal is you're trying to get in the temple, grab as much treasure as you can, and get out before you die. And so you're going to get kind of two shots at this, because each player is going to get two adventurers. They're going to send one through, and if that one dies, then they get a second shot to have the second adventurer drop in and try to finish the game. So you're trying to get out with as much treasure as you can. But if you don't get out at all, then you completely lose anyway. So it's sort of this push-pull of, you know, do I stop and grab more treasure, or do I keep moving? Because there's going to be lots of things working against you in this game. So in the game, the board is divided up into several different areas, dangerous areas, and it's all very thematic. When you think about Indiana Jones or Hollow Earth Expedition, something like that, it's these kinds of things. So it's stuff you've probably seen before. When you step into the first room of the temple, this is the Walls Room. And the game
not just a clever name.
No. The game actually comes with these two big plastic wall pieces. And, you know, the idea is you're walking in, and as you're walking in, the walls are slowly closing in on you, threatening to smush you. And so that's the first room. And then as you exit that room, you kind of turn a corner in the board here. And then you're going to enter into the lava room. And so the lava room has all of these tiles that you can step on. They're like slabs of concrete. As you step on them, they're either going to support you or they're going to break away and cause you to fall into the lava and die.
But in Latin, Jehovah starts with an I.
thank you, Dr. Jones.
You're welcome. And,
actually, Dr. Jones, very nice. Yeah. See? Hey, it works. And then adjacent to that lava room, there are some areas where you can pick some locks. It's like a treasure is hidden behind some, you know, metal grating or something like that.
If you want to take the time to do it.
Right. If you want to take the time, you might be able to pick the lock and grab that treasure. As you continue on, there's a riverbed you can jump into and go down the river, and you can search the riverbed for treasures. And, you know, when you get to the end of the river, there's a waterfall.
Of course.
Yeah. And then you have to hopefully, by some clever dice rolling, exit the river safely and onto the last path. And then from there, you can exit the temple. There's also a rickety bridge that you might want to walk on.
There has to be a rickety.
Yeah. Where depending on how much stuff you're carrying and how heavy you are, you might snap some of the planks on the bridge and you know, cause yourself to possibly fall into the chasm there. So all this stuff is going on. While all that's going on, you have a giant boulder that is rolling its way through the board and weaving its way, snaking from the entrance to the temple all the way to the end, where when it gets to the very end, after possibly, you know, crushing many adventurers in its wake, it's going to plug the exit to the temple, trapping everyone inside. So these are all the things you have going for you.
It's a high-stress job, adventuring.
It is. But the things that you're going to be able to get are these nice treasure cards that are going to be worth various points, and you're going to collect those along the way. So the way it'll kind of work is at the very beginning of your turn, you're going to first off determine what your load level is. And that's based upon how much stuff you're carrying. So if you're carrying between 0 and 3 treasure cards, then your load level is 2. 4 to 6, your load level is 3. And so on, and it goes all the way up to a maximum load level of 5. This is going to be important because if you're carrying a whole lot of stuff, then that means that you're going to be slower because you're carrying all this heavy stuff. And so you might get to do less stuff on your turn based upon how much stuff that you're carrying. So you're going to determine that load level. And if you, it's not like you have to memorize it. On the back of your character card, it tells you what the load levels are, and it gives you a little chart, so it's nice and easy. And since you have two adventurers, you're going to use one of those to have the picture of the guy that's in there right now, and then you'll turn over the other one and be able to kind of place it on top of it to, you know, to show your load level. After you determine your load level, then you're going to determine how many actions everybody is going to get on that turn. The game comes with 5 dice. You're going to roll those 5 dice. And then any number that comes up on the dice that is your load level or higher will give you an action. So if you have a load level of 3, then anything that's a 3+ on those dice will give you an action. So you can have anywhere from 0 to 5 actions, depending on how much stuff you're carrying. So you can sort of see that as you carry more stuff, you know, if you're at a load level of 5, now it's going to take a 5+ to give you an action. So it reduces the number of actions that you might get. So as far as how you spend your actions, then you can always use an action point to move, and you can.
We recommend it.
Yes, as many times as you can. The board is sort of divided up, like I said, in these rooms, but then all the spaces are divided by dotted lines. So anywhere where you can cross a dotted line orthogonally, you can, you know, move a space. And then in each of the areas that you're in, there's some special things that you can do. So for example, the very first room is the walls room. When you walk into that room and you step onto a square, you have the opportunity of looking for treasure. Each space in the walls room, and there's, I believe, four of them, has a treasure deck associated with it. So you can spend an action point to search for a treasure. So you just would pick up that treasure card and you keep it with you. You can also search for clues or decipher a glyph. When you set the game up, you're going to be putting four of these glyph tiles face down onto four spaces next to the walls room. There are 10 other tiles that are going to go next to the board. Now, these 14 tiles total are going to correspond with the tiles that are in the lava room. And the lava room is going to have all these tiles with glyphs on them. And then when you're in the walls room, there'll be these four tiles, and you have the opportunity on each turn to spend an action point to turn over that tile and look at it. So you're going to kind of memorize that glyph, because once you get into the lava room, those four tiles that you've hopefully gotten some information about are going to correspond with the four tiles in the lava room that will break away, the unsafe tiles.
Right.
So if you don't take the time in the walls room to do that research and find out what those glyphs are, then you're kind of going blind into the lava room and you don't know if you're going to be stepping on a safe tile or not.
Or you're forced to kind of take the slower, boulder-filled path.
Right. You can always go around the lava room, but you're basically walking right through the path of where the boulder might be chasing you. So
I wouldn't recommend it.
No. So these are the options you have in the walls room. You can move, you can look for treasure, or you can decipher a glyph. Then you move on into the lava room. When you step onto a tile in the lava room, you will immediately turn it over and see if it corresponds with a safe tile or an unsafe tile. If it's an unsafe tile, then you fall into the lava and you die. It's just that simple. There are no hit points in this game. You just die.
You're gone.
Yep. If it's a safe tile, then you'll keep it turned over, and then you'll have the option of being able to search that tile. And then you will, if you search that tile, there's a deck of cards that go along with the lava room. You'll pull a treasure card from that deck and add it to your hand. So it's just that simple. You know, you just go from tile to tile in that room, and you can always hop out of that room into the corridor if you want to. There's a lot of flexibility there. That's the lava room. Okay. So I mentioned that you have these areas and corridors where you can pick a lock to get a treasure. This is done by rolling five dice. So you can spend an action point to pick that lock by rolling five dice. And then each of those little areas, you have to get a particular number on your dice. So you roll five dice and you need to get a one, a two, and a three in order to pick that lock. So let's say you don't do that. Well, then it becomes kind of like Yahtzee. You can spend another action point to re-roll any of those dice and to try to get that one, two, and three. You can do that for as many times as you want on your turn until you run out of action points. At that point, then the dice don't carry over from turn to turn, but it'll give you a few chances to try to pick that lock and get the treasure out of that. So then you're going to move, you have the possibility of moving into the riverbed. Well, once you move into the riverbed, because it's a river, you have no choice but to follow that path. Once you've gotten in the river, you can't get out except by going all the way down the river path and exiting at the waterfall. Along the way, you have the choice of searching the riverbed, and there's a deck of cards next to the riverbed. You can grab a card from that. So you can sort of see it's a sort of a generic system here. You got all these treasure cards you can pull from different areas. When you get to the end of the river, there's a waterfall there. And exiting the waterfall is going to be a tricky proposition based upon how much stuff you're carrying. So you're going to roll a number of dice equal to your load level. By this time, you're getting towards the end of the game, so you're probably going to have a lot of stuff.
You're moving pretty slow.
Yep. And so let's say your load level is a five. You're going to now roll all five dice. If any of those dice come up as a one, then you fall over the waterfall and die. But
<That's it. laughs>
but you do have an option here, in that for every one that you roll, you can discard three treasure cards to re-roll that die. If you re-roll a die and it still comes up as a one, you die. But this does give you an option if you happen to have rolled a couple of ones that you might be able to dump some treasure and still survive. Because the goal game here is survival. If you die, then you definitely don't win, even if you have a whole bunch of treasure. And then there's the rickety bridge that you can step onto. When you step onto the bridge, you're going to roll a number of dice equal to the number of planks that are still on the bridge. You start off with five planks. And once you roll these dice, you're then going to look at your load level, and any dice that come up lower than your load level, you're going to snap a plank. So if you have a load level of three, you roll five dice when you first step onto the bridge, and you got a couple of them that come up as twos, then those planks will snap. If you have at least one plank left after doing that, then you're safe and you can continue on. If you snap all the planks,
you die.
Yeah. You should know how it goes by now. So all of those are the things that you can do on your turn. Now, at the end of the turn, after everybody has taken their moves, two things are going to happen. One, the walls are going to move in the walls room. And you're only going to do this the first part of the game, because eventually everybody will hopefully leave the walls room. There's a deck of cards for the walls, and you're going to turn over three cards from that deck. The cards will either have nothing on them, might be blank. You might see a gray arrow, or you might see an orange arrow, or you might see both arrows on one card. The orange arrow corresponds to one of the walls, the gray to the other wall, and so this will determine how many spaces the walls move inward on that turn. After you do that, then the boulder is going to move. And the boulder starts off, it sort of gains momentum as the game goes on. So it's going to start off and you're going to roll one die. The boulder always moves on a roll of a 3+. So you'll roll one die the first one, so it has the potential moving up to one space. The next turn, you'll roll two dice, three, four, and then by the fifth turn, you'll roll five dice, and it will have reached its terminal velocity, and you'll continue to roll five dice every turn. Again, moving it one space per die for every roll of a three or higher. And if you roll over a person, then
you die.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it goes. So these are the things that you're kind of up against here, and that's the kind of the whole goal. Now, if one of your adventurers happens to die, because we've mentioned several ways that could happen.
Sure.
There is two spaces on the board where you can sort of respawn an adventurer. In other words, bring out your second adventurer. And these are two tiles that are in the lava room. Now, one stipulation is that you cannot use those tiles to bring in your second adventurer until after the boulder has already passed by that corner. So if that's the case where the boulder hasn't passed by yet, you might have to wait a couple of turns and not do anything until you get to that point and you can add in your second adventurer. But your goal is to try to get at least one of your adventurers all the way through out to the exit with some treasure in their hand.
Right, because this is a question I had. You can't get one adventurer out and then start a second, right?
Right.
The second one's only if your first one dies a horrible death.
Right.
Okay.
I believe that's right. Yep. After all the adventurers have gotten out, or if the boulder plugs the door to the exit, trapping some of them, whoever has gotten out with treasure, you're going to add up the points of the treasure cards, and whoever has the most treasure wins.
It's that simple.
It's just that simple. So, impressions of the adventurers is a very thematic game.
Oh, sure. It's definitely up my alley because the theme and then the Ameritrashiness of it. It's just a perfect marriage for me. There's a few things that I could find that some people may dislike about it. The potential for the boulder to plug up the entrance before anyone gets out, which happened in our game.
Yeah.
That could happen and then no one wins. If that bugs you, then, that's something to be aware of. And the boulder is kind of deceptive at how quick it moves, because I thought I was going at a really good clip. I was looking for treasure here and there, but I was really focused on getting out. And I was probably four or five spaces ahead of John and Kalen when we played it. My goal was, you do not get trapped by that boulder. And then sure enough, by the end, that boulder got, a move of five on its terminal velocity and ran me over on my way out, and it stuck the other two in there. So that's something to be aware of, is like the boulder moves, it serves as a timer for the game in a way, but it gets going real fast, and you may think, oh, I've got three or four turns, and it'll close the gap real quick. The second thing I want to bring up is, if you play this game a lot, and which I think you would if you picked it up, it could start to get a little stale, just because you're always going to be doing the walls room, you're always going to be doing the lava room, and then the river, and the waterfall, and the bridge, and all that. I could see this game benefiting from expansions, either of a modular nature, where, there's more rooms added on, or of a replacement nature, where you put something over the walls room, or over the lava pit,
Right.
Because I could see that getting old if you brought this out quite a bit. It's like, you would just kind of get a set strategy and a timing and get it down, and you might lose some of that flavor. But otherwise, I really enjoyed it.
It sounds like that they may be thinking about doing what you're saying about expansions, because I mentioned the game's called The Adventurers, but there's also kind of a subtitle to the game where it's called, The Adventurers, The Temple of Shaq. Or Shaq?
Shaquille O'Neal.
It's C-H-A-C. I don't know how you pronounce that.
Shaq-Fu.
The Temple of Shaq. So, you know, it just sort of seems like it'd be real easy to create an additional board and maybe have it attached to where the current exit is,
right,
and just continue on the temple for another board. I agree with you. I think that that's maybe the only hesitation that I have with this game is the fact that you could sort of figure it out after a while. You know, figure out how fast you need to move and what you need to get, you know, especially if you're playing with new players. Cause I think if you're a brand new player, I think it's likely that you're going to get trapped inside
the
temple.
Yeah.
Cause you'll think, oh, get treasure. And you'll misjudge how fast that boulder is moving.
But I would say that's true with any game, really, if you have new players. And I think they'll feed off of the veteran players at that.
Yeah.
But that's just something to be aware of. The replayability may not be completely there for this.
Yeah, I think it's a highly accessible game, though, mm-hmm, because, you know, you look at it, you see The Mummy or Indiana Jones, and I think that's accessible to a lot of people. And I think the pieces are very cool. It comes with a big plastic boulder. I mean, the thing's probably 2-3 inches in diameter.
And the miniatures and the art are just great art direction, great pulpy style, and that just really adds to the game.
Yep, and I think that they even are coming out with, or may already be out, a whole set of fully painted miniatures for game.
At a cheaper price than the Arkham Horror miniatures were going to be.
Right.
They can those.
Yeah, so there's you can even kit out this game a lot more with some, you know, even more colorful components.
And you could paint the boulder, and you could paint the walls. That'd be easy.
Yeah, you could do that.
We're like on a painting kick now. We want to paint everything.
Let's paint everything.
Let's paint Dominion.
It needs it too, doesn't it?
Yeah, doesn't it?
Yeah. So anyway, we'll just go ahead and launch right into our review or our rating, if you will.
I will.
The Adventurers, The Temple of Shaq. Buy, try, or deny?
It's a buy for me, even with the issues that I mentioned earlier. It's a lot of fun. It's an accessible game, and it's one of those where at the end of it, you just kind of say, you know, that was fun. You know, we should do that again. That was it had a lot of charm to it, and I think this does set the precedent for future games like it or in that line, which it's pretty unique. It's almost got some like kids games element into it, you know, with the stuff, you know, like the components and things of that nature. But it's a fun little game. I really enjoyed it, and you can play it once you know the rules. You can play it in under an hour, easy.
Yeah, definitely.
So I would give it a definite buy. I'm in a buying mood this episode.
I know, you're just so perky.
Well, I'll throw it back to you. The Adventurers, buy, try, or deny?
This one's a buy for me too, and for all the reasons that Cody mentioned. It's a lot of fun. The components are really cool. They're almost, you know, toy-like, as the walls and the boulder and everything. I know I played this with Ethan, my 6-year-old, and you know, he needed a little bit of help as far as the dice and the actions and that kind of stuff. But because I think the game is listed as being for 10 and older, and that's probably the age you would need to be to really get a grasp of, you know, the risk element and the pressure luck part of it. But he kept saying, you know, kept wanting to roll the dice for the boulder, you know, and he ended up winning, actually, because I was trying to get treasure and everything.
Yep.
He was really cautious. So he's like, I just want to get out of here. He ended up with like 4 points of treasure, but I got trapped, so he won.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, if you have your second adventurer, you know, your chances even of the just out of the gate are really low that you're going to get out of there, because the boulder has already passed you.
Right.
So I was just thinking, as you were explaining the rules, I'm like, you know, if it were tough, my second adventure, I would just get one card of treasure and run for the exit.
Yeah, and you might have a good chance of winning.
Because really, your load level would be so low.
Yeah.
Strategy, huh?
So, I definitely give this a buy. I think it's a lot of fun, and it's something you can bring out with non-gamers, which for me is always a draw. When I can bring something out with non-gamers, I'm always trying to rope people into this gaming hobby, and I think this is a good little gateway, fun, you know, party. It's not really a party game, but it could be played in that kind of environment if you wanted to.
It's fun.
So it's a buy for me for The Adventurers.
Running, the adventurers have put themselves in great danger. They throw the rope and the gun, and they fire at the Indian, and they run, and they run, and they run, and they run.
Okay, that's two buys for The Adventurers. Definitely a good game you want to check out. And
absolutely,
some other things you might want to check out is our website at gameonpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to the site, get the latest updates. We do some reviews, some buy, try, or denies that actually aren't part of the show. So you get some bonuses there. So definitely check that out. You can check us out on...
Oh, yeah. I just want to mention that if you subscribe to the website via FeedBurner, all you got to do is just put your email address right there where it says subscribe on the website. then anytime we update with a new episode or a review or something, just kind of a one-off thing, you'll get a nice email from the Game On Inbox telling you that that content is there. So it's a really easy way to get all the new content without having to keep going to the website.
Absolutely. And it's spam-free. We are
spam-free. As far as we know, yeah. Yeah.
We do not put any spam.
Yeah. We subscribe to our own website, and I've never gotten any spam based upon that.
We're not selling it to third world countries.
That's right.
Yet. some other ways you can check us out is on Board Game Geek. We have a guild there. You can just search for Game On with Cody and John, or I think we're number...
I think it's 577.
I think it 576, maybe?
we'll get it eventually.
Check it out. Or just find us. We are on Twitter, Game On Podcast, all one word, and we're on Facebook. Just search us and become a fan of us, because we really would really like that.
We are the masters of all media. We're everywhere.
Apparently, yes.
So we would always invite you to write us at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Yep, with any kind of commentary that you have. You know, as you have heard, we read emails on the show, and we just love to interact with you guys and just hear what you're thinking about gaming and things like that. So tell us if you liked our interview with Andy Looney. We had a really great time talking with him, and that'll hopefully be the first of many interviews that we'll do.
Absolutely. That was a lot of fun.
Yep. So join us in 2 weeks, where we're going to be tackling a pretty big box game from our good friends at Fantasy Flight.
That's right. Middle Earth Quest.
Ooh, yeah. And, you know, we'd have to go back several episodes, but when I first mentioned Middle Earth Quest on the show, you kind of...
Oh, I groaned at it.
You groaned at it.
I may still groan at it.
You may, but you know, you'll have to check it out. We're gonna play it and give you the full review on that in the next one. We'll have lots of other great content. And hey, until next time,
game on.